This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
They must stop. Humanitarian workers need assurances of safety and security in order to continue delivering critical humanitarian and health response.
That's WHO spokesman Christian Lindemeyer on the rising number of attacks on healthcare workers in Sudan. Details coming up. Also, Egypt is limiting electricity used with daily cutbacks nationwide. And World Food Program is slowly resuming food aid to Ethiopia. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. First, our top story. The military junta in Niger has cut ties with Nigeria after the Economic Community of West African States, or ECOWAS, failed to resolve the leadership crisis in Niamey. A reporter in Abuja, Nigeria, spoke to some analysts on why the junta is isolating itself from other nations.
The high-powered peace talks delegation sent by ECOWAS chairman and Nigeria president Bola Tinubu had arrived in Niger to establish a dialogue with the junta in order to obtain the return to constitutional order and the reinstatement of the democratic president Mohamed Bazoum. The spokesperson for Niger's coup leader, Colonel Mohamed Amadou Abdourahmane, announced that Niger had severed ties with Nigeria in a broadcast last Thursday, according to Radio France International. Frank Tete, a human rights lawyer and political analyst, says it was obvious the military government is desperate to form new alliances.
It is also struggling to be assertive by appearing that it has resolved not to give in to the threats by ECOWAS. The decision of the junta to close the borders of Niger against Nigeria is a mere grandstanding to impress the people of Niger. It is rather a poor show of strength that is most likely to further hurt the people of Niger.
The Nigerian government had closed the country's border with the Republic of Niger following the military takeover in the West African country in July. Tete is calling on ECOWAS to employ all tools of dialogue in dealing with the junta.
President Bola Ahmed Tinubu of Nigeria, who is also the chairman of ECOWAS, must be very careful not to be drawn into this contest of military and economic supremacy that is being touted by the Nigerian junta. Rather, more time and greater effort must be expended in finding a diplomatic solution to the present situation in Niger.
Public affairs analyst Jide Ojo, who describes the situation in the Niger Republic as unfortunate, says diplomacy would help avert any further damage between the two neighboring countries.
Nigeria at present has over 300,000 refugees in Niger Republic, and seven states in Nigeria shares border with Niger. These seven states will be economically affected when there is a refugee problem in Niger.
On Friday, President Bola Tinubu wrote to Nigerian's parliament seeking its support for military intervention against the junta. Ojo commended the parliament for its efforts to resolve the conflict in a non-violent manner.
The president is receiving a lot of counsel from within the country and outside, and it's heartwarming that the Senate of the Federal Republic of Nigeria last Saturday did not approve of the deployment of troops in Niger.
Ojo pointed out that good governance is the best way to avert military takeovers in Africa. 8 days ago, ECOWAS issued a seven-day ultimatum to the junta for the reinstatement of President Bazoum to power. For VOA News, from Abuja, Nigeria.
The second-ranking U.S. diplomat met Niger's military leaders yesterday to press them to reverse their coup, but reported no headway a day after an ultimatum from the West African bloc, ECOWAS, was ignored. Victoria Nuland, acting Deputy Secretary of State, said she met for more than 2 hours with military chiefs who ousted democratically elected President Mohamed Bazoum on July 26th. Nolan's trip, conducted in secrecy until she left, came after the expiration of a deadline set by ECOWAS to reinstate Bazoum by midnight on Sunday or risk military intervention. The French news agency AFP says Nolan described her talks as extremely frank and at times quite difficult. She said she offered the coup leaders a number of options to end the crisis and restore ties with the United States, which, like other Western nations, has suspended aid. Nolan said she met Brigadier General Moussa Salahu Baramu, who has been named the new military chief of staff and who has worked closely in the past with the United States, which, along with former colonial power France, has based anti-jihadist operations in the Sahel out of Niger. Nolan said she warned Niger against following neighboring Mali in bringing in mercenaries from Russia's Wagner Group, who she said are a risk to the sovereignty of countries who invite the group in. ECOWAS is reconvening for its own diplomatic push on the crisis with a summit Thursday in Nigerian capital Abuja. Terrorist groups such as Akim and the Islamic State use the vast, in part very mountainous areas of Fezzan in southern Libya as a safe haven, where they can operate almost completely unchallenged with a logistics depot, training, deployment, and evasion area. Wolfgang Porsche, former Austrian military attaché in Libya, explains to VOA senior analyst Mohammed El-Shenawi how these terrorist groups could exploit the fragile situation in Niger and Libyan borders in expanding their activities.
First, I would like to mention the current American and French deployment of troops and of intelligence assets in Niger. The United States operates a logistic and a training base in Niamey, capital, and a drone base in Agadez in the north. This is the central element for American surveillance in the fight against terrorism in the whole Sahel region. From this base in Agadez, most of the American surveillance and combat sorties over Libya and also over the other countries in the region are flown. If the situation constitutes a coup from an official American point of view, the Americans would need to withdraw from Mali. This would mean that in order to maintain a drone base in the Sahara region, they could eventually move the base to Chad. But the drone base in N'Djamena, in the capital of Chad, for example, is already quite far away from the terrorist hotspots in Mali and Burkina Faso. An example, a typical mission of the MQ-9 Reaper drone is about 1,800 kilometers away from its home base. The distance from N'Djamena to Bamako in Mali is 2,500 kilometers. With regard to the French, fortunately, their nuclear industry is not as dependent on the uranium from Niger as it was just a couple of years ago, but they still maintain a significant military presence in Niger, more than 1,500 troops. They have a main base in Niamey, and they conduct long-range and commando operations from northern Niger from Madama. In this base, either a paratrooper company or a company from the French Foreign Legion is permanently deployed, and they are providing surveillance and ambushes on smuggling and terrorist groups in northern Niger, in the area of the Salvador Pass towards Libya, if the Americans and the French will withdraw. This gives the terrorist organizations much more room to maneuver throughout the region, not only in Libya, throughout the region. An engagement of the Russian Wagner Group by the military regime is likely, but I'm sure they won't be able to make up for the Western support.
Following the withdrawal of the French-led Takuba forces from Mali in August of 2022 and the subsequent withdrawal of French forces from Burkina Faso in 2023, France shifted its forces to Niger. Additionally, the planned withdrawal of the UN Stabilization Force from Mali by the end of 2023 puts an end to the decade-long presence of a 17,000-strong mission. How could these withdrawals and the anti-Western sentiment in Niger following the military coup risk jeopardize hard-won gains in fight against jihadist insurgency in the region?
This is a very significant development. The West and especially the European Union attempted a comprehensive approach to keep Niger stable and to fight terrorism. And Niger is more or less the last bastion in this region for this approach. This doesn't mean only military support, but also significant economic and development aid. Within an integrated approach, the European Union provided support to peace building, to conflict prevention, to dialogue, and there's development coordination in parallel with humanitarian assistance. Niger is one of the poorest countries on the globe. The European Union alone allocated $552 million to improve governance, education, and sustainable growth in Niger between 2021 and 24. In addition to what was provided by the member states, like Germany, which provided $132 million. And the just recently launched European Union military partnership mission in Niger was a long-term effort to enhance the military capacity and the democratization of Nigerian armed forces. All this will now be probably replaced by a less sophisticated kinetic-only approach, relying on Wagner mercenaries and Russian attack helicopters. We can see in Mali how inefficient this is.
That was Wolfgang Poshtai, former Austrian military attaché in Libya, speaking with VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi. The South African trade union Solidarity is in talks with United States diplomats and members of Congress for the country to keep its status as a beneficiary of the American government's African Growth and Opportunity Act, AGOA. AGOA gives certain African countries preferential trade access to U.S. markets, earning them billions of dollars in revenue from products including fruit and vegetables and motor vehicles. But some American lawmakers are pushing for South Africa to be expelled from AGOA because of its close ties with Russia. Darren Taylor reports.
Relations between Washington and Pretoria have been strained ever since President Vladimir Putin invaded Ukraine in February 2022. President Cyril Ramaphosa's African National Congress administration has never condemned Russia for invading its neighbor. Instead, it has moved to strengthen ties with Moscow, declaring it wants greater military cooperation with Russia. Some members of Congress say this would endanger U.S. security interests. Solidarity representative Tiens Dubuisson says his union's dialogue with American politicians about South Africa's AGOA membership began 3 months ago.
At the time, we were hearing statements from high-ranking government officials saying things like, America is not important to us. We saw it as very dangerous for government wishing to alienate the largest economy that makes up 10% of our exports. Those officials jeopardizing the futures of South Africa do not speak for all of government and definitely don't speak for all of South Africa.
Dubuisson says it's vital that U.S. lawmakers realize about 500,000 South Africans will lose their jobs if the country loses its AGOA status. He drafted a report about this, which he says was very well received in Washington.
The exporters who actually make use of AGOA were perhaps the most important contributors to this crisis, as also on their own accord, without the assistance of government, contacted Washington and made their case and their plea, and also showed that in some cases their businesses exist only to provide the U.S. market with products that we can produce here.
Solidarity says its interaction with senior U.S. politicians is important because it gives them perspective on how critical AGOA is to South African workers. According to state trade statistics, the country earned $11 billion from AGOA exports last year. Products sent to the U.S. included citrus fruits and motor vehicles. The latest statistics say bilateral trade between South Africa and Russia stands at just over $1 billion, with South Africa exporting precious metals and fresh produce to Russia. AGOA is up for renewal in 2025, but analysts expect Washington to make a decision soon on whether South Africa remains in the pact. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. Human Rights Watch says Egypt is limiting electricity use with daily cutbacks nationwide, putting people's economic and social rights at risk. HRW says the cuts appear to last longer in rural areas, which have higher poverty rates and have left many people without power amid soaring temperatures, hindering their ability to work and limiting access to water. The government says the cuts are meant to reduce pressure on the country's electricity infrastructure due to increased demand. It also says the electricity crisis was caused by an inadequate gas supply to run power plants. Late last month, the government announced that rationing would last at least until September. The World Food Programme is slowly resuming food aid to Ethiopia nearly 5 months after suspending it to millions of people after the discovery of a massive scheme to steal donated grain. The Associated Press says the WFP is testing small-scale distribution in some areas but acknowledges that the government still plays a role in the process. The WFP says it has started distributing wheat to around 100,000 people in four districts of Ethiopia's northern Tigray region on July 31st as it tests enhanced controls and measures for delivering food assistance. Tigray is recovering from a 2-year conflict with Ethiopian forces that ended in November. The WFP's new measures include digitally registering beneficiaries, adding markings to grain sacks, and more training for aid partners. The agency says it is confident the measures will help ensure food reaches the people who need it most. Critics of the aid suspension have called it immoral and alleged that hundreds of people have died of hunger. The United States, however, says its own suspension of food aid to the East African country will continue while it negotiates with Ethiopian government to reform a system long controlled by local authorities. The pause has affected 20 million Ethiopians, 1/6 of the population, plus 800,000 refugees. UN agencies warn health conditions are deteriorating across Sudan and neighboring countries as growing numbers of people flee escalating fighting between the Sudanese armed forces and the paramilitary rapid support forces. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
Before the conflict erupted on April 15th, 4.5 million Sudanese already were displaced, more than 3.7 million as displaced people inside Sudan, and another 800,000 as refugees in Chad, South Sudan, Egypt, and Ethiopia. Since the rival generals went to war, the UN Refugee Agency reports nearly an equal number, more than 4 million people, have become newly displaced. It says it is deeply worried about the health conditions in refugee and IDP camps inside Sudan, as well as among those arriving in neighboring countries. UNHCR spokesman William Spindler calls the situation inside Sudan untenable, with needs far outweighing available resources. For example, he notes White Nile State lacks essential medicines and is short of staff to care for the ill. He says this is severely hampering health and nutrition services for more than 144,000 newly displaced refugees in all 10 refugee camps in the region.
As many families have been on the move for weeks with very little food and medicine, rising malnutrition rates, disease outbreaks, and related deaths continue to be observed. In addition, severe cholera and malaria are expected in the coming months due to flooding from the continuing rains and inadequate sanitation facilities.
The UNHCR reports there have been more than 300 deaths, mainly among children under 5 years, due to measles and malnutrition between May 15th and July 17th. It warns health services are being stretched thin for lack of funds, supplies, and chronic shortages in health staff. Now, in its fourth month of conflict, the World Health Organization reports Sudan's insecurity, as well as limited access to medicines, medical supplies, electricity, and water, pose a challenge to the delivery of health care. WHO spokesman Christian Lindemeyer says attacks on health facilities are increasing, preventing the sick and wounded from getting needed care. Between April 15th and July 31st, he says WHO has verified 53 attacks on health care, causing 11 deaths and 38 injuries.
Attacks on health care are a gross violation of international humanitarian law and the right to health. They must stop. Humanitarian workers need assurances of safety and security in order to continue delivering critical humanitarian and health response.
The Federal Ministry of Health reports 12,200 people have been injured and 1,205 killed since April 15th. Figures UN agencies believe are greatly underestimated. UNHCR and WHO warn the lives of many people are hanging by a thread. They are appealing for more donor support to save the lives that will be lost if that help is not forthcoming. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Intelligence assessments say Sudan's Rapid Support Forces, RSF paramilitary, has the resources and skill to sustain its war against the Sudanese army for years to come. Darren Taylor reports.
The conflict's been the most intense in the capital, Khartoum, and in the western Darfur region. 20 years ago, many current Rapid Support Force fighters, including leader Mohamed Hemeti Dagalo, were members of Arab militias known as the Janjaweed, which terrorized Darfur. Their task, says former United States intelligence analyst Cameron Hudson, was to wipe out Sudanese of African ethnicity for then-ruler Omar al-Bashir.
They became responsible for what we would consider to be the most kind of gruesome aspects of the killing in Darfur. Because they were on the ground, because they were coming in on horseback and camelback, they were carrying out the rapes. They were carrying out the person-to-person killing, the destroying of villages and water points, the destruction of livestock, the looting, all of these kind of very personal crimes.
Hudson was speaking during a recent Atlantic Council webinar. The International Criminal Court indicted al-Bashir and others for genocide in Darfur, but they haven't been prosecuted. Al-Bashir was overthrown in 2019 and remains in the custody of the Sudanese army. Hudson says with so many conflicts unresolved in Sudan, it's fertile ground for the present fighting to expand into a full-blown civil war and possibly a regional war.
As this fighting has gone on, we have seen new factions emerge. Arab tribes from Darfur, we're seeing opposition groups from the Nuba Mountains begin to take opportunities available to them to strike. This is a conflict that affects every corner of the country. It affects every tribe, group, ethnicity, socioeconomic class of the country, and every major city throughout the country. It is really a far more devastating and comprehensive conflict than anything that we've really witnessed in Sudan's modern history.
The RSF fought as mercenaries in Libya and Yemen, building a cash reserve that allowed it to go on mass recruitment drives. Hudson says it's getting the upper hand in Khartoum because regular reinforcements are coming in from Darfur.
It's really, I think, the appeal of the Rapid Support Forces right now and its leader, General Dagalo Hemeti. This idea that for so long these peripheral areas have been marginalized and that they are going to bring this violence that has always plagued the peripheral communities. They're going to bring it to the capital. They're going to bring it to the elites of the country, and they are going to make them feel some measure of what these other communities have been feeling for decades now.
VOA tried repeatedly to get reaction from the RSF to Hudson's comments, but their spokesman never responded. Several attempts by Saudi Arabia, the United States, the African Union, and other parties to negotiate lasting ceasefires in Sudan have failed, and talks have been stalled for weeks. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
And with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, and our engineer, Zainab Abdul Rahman, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.